Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
On college campuses across America, there are heightened tensions, protests, and concerns about free speech in light of the Israel-Hamas war. Students are clashing in classrooms, getting doxxed for signing a statement of support of one side, and facing harassment for their religious beliefs. There's also a growing movement among students and faculty to push back against the censorship and suspension of student groups like Students for Justice in Palestine and Jewish Voice for Peace. In Florida, two separate SJP groups filed a lawsuit against Governor Ron DeSantis and the state's university system for blocking Students for Justice in Palestine from receiving school funds and using campus facilities. Suzanne Nozzle has been writing about the discord that's playing out on university campuses. She's an author and the CEO of PEN America. Suzanne, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So the turmoil we're seeing on college campuses across America is sort of a microcosm of what's playing out on a larger scale throughout the world, but it seems even more heightened. How do you feel campuses reach this point?
Look, the college campus for many American young people is the first moment in life where they are together with those from vastly different backgrounds, be those racial, ethnic, religious, ideological, geographic, and we're not doing enough in this country to prepare people for that interface, for how to engage with people who think and perhaps behave very differently from them. And this conflict, which is very polarizing, very emotional, taps deep wells of family histories, global histories, trauma, has become a combustible mix.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's speak directly. We've seen Jewish students and faculty feel like pro-Palestinian protests are spreading anti-Semitism, and pro-Palestinian protesters feel like they're being held accountable for the actions of Hamas, and in some cases accused of justifying the October 7 actions. Are there lines that cannot be crossed when protesting?
There are. Look, under the First Amendment, there are categories of speech that are not protected. Those include true threats, incitement to imminent violence, harassment, and we have seen examples on campuses of speech that crosses over those lines. In Cornell, there were direct threats on a campus center for Jewish students. You know, we've seen a hit and run incident that appears to have been motivated by Islamophobia at Stanford. So there certainly are incidents that cross the line that are not protected. I mean, the Stanford was not even speech. But then there are also boisterous, vociferous protests that, while they may feel a bit intimidating or menacing, are just the exercise of free speech rights. Part of the answer is building some resiliency and some ability for students to understand their own reactions, to know why free speech is protected, and that the protection of somebody else's right to say something that may offend you is the very same protection that allows you to say your piece. And we've sort of lost the thread in terms of educating our students about why it is that we protect freedom of expression in this country and what that's going to look like on campus.
And then you have some of the students saying, well, all this speech is not being treated with the same disciplinary actions right now. Is there censorship or a denial of free speech do you see happening?
There are incidents, for example, at Hunter College, they canceled the screening of a documentary that is critical of Israel and of how American Jewish students are brought up. And you know, they cited concerns about security, but it seemed as if they'd really just come under pressure to cancel it. And we reject that. There also was an incident in California where a professor was walking past a protest and said that Hamas, you know, was guilty and they should be retaliated against. And he was actually fired for expressing that opinion, which was a very extreme reaction to an isolated statement. So we've seen examples of overreach on both sides. I think a lot of university administrators don't understand exactly where these boundaries lie. They're being buffeted by pressures coming from students, from faculty, from donors, and they need a stronger grounding in kind of first principles of what speech is protected and what isn't, what the boundaries are and why.
Okay, so you gave us some of that at the top, those boundaries. But I wonder if you can just reiterate for us, how can campuses across America move forward, you know, and become the places we think of them, where differing opinions can coexist, can serve as jumping off points for understanding and for growth rather than for conflict and suppression of free speech?
I think one of the most important pieces is that when there is speech that some consider offensive on campus, the answer is not to suppress it, but not suppressing it doesn't mean that you do nothing. There's a lot that you can do about whether it's Islamophobic speech or anti-Semitic speech short of banning or punishing it. You can support the students who feel targeted. You can stand in solidarity with them. You can exercise the right of counter speech. You can give people guidance about how to mount a counter protest and ensure that there is space for other perspectives to be heard. You can make sure that policies on diversity, equity, and inclusion include religion and address issues of religiously based discrimination. So there's a whole playbook that universities can and should exercise to address concerns about Islamophobia, concerns about anti-Semitism in ways that don't involve infringing on free speech rights.
Author and CEO of PEN America, Suzanne Nossel, thanks so much.
Thank you.